Today's daf, an exciting Ye'ezu Neshech, right here in the fifth parak above Metzia, is daf Ayin Beit. We're holding Aleph, Omud, Beit. And we're in the middle of trying to figure out how it is that if somebody, a Jew, borrowed money from a Goy, and it's time for him to repay it, and another Jew comes along and wants to borrow it in his stead, that we say that that's okay, as long as it was cleared, they went to the Goy and they cleared it. Question was, how did that work? Because really, it's going straight from the Jew to the Jew. What does it mean when you say you cleared it? So our first thought was, you cleared it means that now the Goy essentially has appointed you an agent to go and give it to the next guy. And as an agent, you're not doing anything wrong, you're doing it for the Goy. Now our problem with that was that there's no agency for us. Because since the Makor of the Din of Shlichut is the halacha of gamatem, atem gamatem, as we darshan it from Truma. And over there we darshan matem b'nei brit, ashluchachem b'nei brit, in both directions. So both the atem and the shluchachem require being Jewish. So how do we get away with this? So one approach that we had was, it's talking about that when we say you cleared it with the goy, what it means is not that the goy said, okay, give it to the next guy. What the goy said was, put it down on the counter, and your business with this money is over. In which case, even if you gave it to the other guy, it wouldn't matter. Or we said even the bigger kiddush, which made more sense, is that the goy takes it out of your hand and he hands it over to the other guy. And the kiddush there is that you might think that he's acting basically just doing what you told him to do, but it's really your loan, and that's why he's allowing the other guy to have it, because he's looking at it as yours. Now you said it's okay to give it to the other guy. The mashmalan that it's renewed. Now, yesterday, Rav Ashi tried to get out of the whole problem by saying two possibilities, both of which the Gemara says is just ridiculous. I mean, it can't be true. Either he tried to say that a goy can perhaps not be a shliach, but can make a shliach. No, that's not true. And then we said maybe there's a difference between true and other things. That's not true. Okay, so that didn't work. Today, we're trying to find an alternative. And we're up to Ravina Omar, which is the last word, three lines up the bottom. And Ravina wants to say, look, your whole problem is that you cannot be acting as an agent, right? Because an agent requires appointment, but there's no appointment because the guy cannot create an agency. You're right, but it's true that there's no din of shlichut by appointment. Nonetheless, zechiyah mir rabbanan ifle. Rabbanan gave the power of zochin lo to others for him. Because let's say, for instance, a child. Child cannot appoint an agent, because since we learn out agency from Truma, and a child cannot make Truma because it says Ish ki Yagdish, and he's not an Ish yet. Nonetheless, the halacha is that if you intend to be Zoche on behalf of a minor, then even though he doesn't have a Shlichut, you can so to speak, effectuate what is for all intents and purposes an agency without being appointed. That's called Zechiyah. Okay, so the Rabbanan used that koach for a katan. So then it may well be it's exactly the same thing for a goy. Even a goy cannot create an agent. But what happens over here is that when the second borrower, the Jew, takes it from the first borrower, he's going to be zoche in that money on behalf of the goy, the lender, and now keep it for himself. So it's as if, therefore, he's giving it back to the goy before the second Jew was zoche in it, and not that it was transferred from Jew to Jew. So even though that's only a Rabbanah, and we're dealing with Ribit, so it may well be, some Rishonim suggest, that Ribit that is paid ultimately to a Goy is only a Nisid Rabbanah, no matter how it's done. In which case, it's sufficient that the Rabbanan created Zechiyah mid Rabbanan for the Goy in this case to avoid a Nisid Rabbanah. The payment is being made to him. I mean, you're saying, yeah, but I mean, legally, you really own the money. Okay, fine, so... But the Torah didn't, he's getting it. So the Torah didn't ask that. The Rabbanan asked it. Because they wanted you to dot all your I's and cross all your T's. So in this case, they gave you Zechiyah. But others learn that the way such a Zechiyah would work is through the Koyach of Hefker Bez and Hefker. Because wherever the Rabbanan are mitake, that somebody owns something that he doesn't really own, how can they do that? Only because Bezdin has the right to define the nature of property ownership, which means if it's defined, then it's real. So that something that starts off in a Rabbanan that's based on Hefker Bezdin is a deranta in the end, because they're mizaket to you. Therefore, in this case, there's no problem. We don't have to say it's talking about that he said set it down on the counter. That's Ravina's approach. So even though, let's see it inside. But zechiyah min rabbanan itlay. Minidavei akatan. Same way a child, katan. Is it not true that a minor, afagav de letlay shlichut, but itlay zechiyah, other people can be mizaket something for a katan? So you could be kaina something on behalf of a minor, and then the minor will actually own it. So if that's the case, there should be no difference in this case, because the goy, despite the fact that he has no shlichut, could have zechiyah. But, says the Gemara, do not believe Ravina either. Velohi is simply not the case. It's not comparable. Because, look, the minor has got a minor problem. And his minor problem is that it takes a little time to grow up. I mean, but ultimately, he's included entirely in the parsha of shlichut. All we're doing is we're saying, okay, so you don't have to wait. So Yisrael is ati lechlal shlichut, but an Akub is not even in the getter of being able to do things for him at any point legally. So we're going to create now a zechiyah and say that's a minor tikkun. It's a total change of the way in which legalities function with the goy. Why would we do that? So an Akub who is lo ati lechlal shlichut at all will not be given min rabbanan zechiyah, and it doesn't make sense to extrapolate from minors to Akub. Tan rabbanan. Yisrael shalavama ot minanochri beribit. A Jew borrows money from a goy, and he borrows it beribit. And now it comes, say, 3 years into the loan, they make a cheshbon. Okay, you owe so much for the principal, so much for the interest. Your total debt at this point is beep, and that's what you owe. So once we defined what you owe, it's no longer owed as ribit. It's just now a loan. This is what you owe on your loan. Now the goy goes ahead and becomes Jewish. So now, in kodem shenitgayer zakfan alav b'milva, if this money was due as a set amount of money before he became Jewish, so then the Jew can be gover the keren, he can be gover the rebate, because it's not really rebate at this point. It's just money that's owed. It's like saying that he's been dealing in selling bacon. You know, so as a Jew, he wouldn't be able to sell bacon. So therefore, if there's money owed him for the bacon, you can't pay him that. It's ridiculous. I mean, well, who cares? Right now, it's money. What he did then as a goy, I mean, it's the same thing over here. So he paid you rebate as a goy. But right now, it's money that he owes you. It's not defined as rebate. So then you would be go for the Karen and go for the rebate, because it's just a loan. So now, even though he's a Jew, and he's not allowed to collect rebate as a Jew, it doesn't matter. Because if Kodem Shitgeir Zakvanam Vimilva, then as a Jew, he could be go over the full amount, even though it includes Karen and it includes Rebit. But if, after he became a Jew, then we say, well, this is the amount of Rebit that you are owed, well, then you can't collect it, because then it's Rebit. So you can't be Zorkin off a bill at that point. So then he would be go over the Karen and not the Rebit. Big mistake. He should have become Jewish at some other time. Now, the same thing is true in the opposite case. Let's say the Goy borrows money from a Jew on a certain amount of interest. And now the Jew tells him, this is how much you owe for the past 3 years, now becomes a milva. And then the guy goes and becomes Jewish. Well, now that's a smart move. And he figures if he becomes Jewish, now the guy can't collect any of the interest due. But if Achelon Nitgayer Zakvanal Milva, if that was turned into a specific amount of money that was owed, and now that's a loan, so then you could be go over the whole thing, because it's not being collected as rebate, it's being collected as for money that was owed for pork chops. Who cares? But the bottom line is, you're now collecting Govet HaKeren, the Govet HaRibit, collect the whole thing, because right now he's paying you money, not rebate. But after he became Jewish already, then you turn it into this is how much you owe, and you're Zorkin al Benova. And that means you define for a Jew what he owed as interest. You can't do that. So govet hakeren, they know govet haribit. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, in the latter case where the goy was the one who borrowed the money from the Jew on interest, I don't care what happens. You can always collect the interest. Govet benkach or benkach, govet hakeren, and govet haribit. And says Rav Amar Chistam Rav Unad, that's how we paskin. Halachic Rabbi Yossi, and let me explain to you why. My time in Rabbi Yossi, I mean, you say it's outrageous. It's not outrageous. Because if Lamaisa, we end up letting him off of the rebid, then it's going to be the first thing that people will say is the basis of his giur. He takes out a mortgage, and he's supposed to be paying 12% on his mortgage, and he's got a great idea. Let me become Jewish. I save 12% of interest on my mortgage. I can afford my home. So it's, Veer, what a smart guy. I was wondering why anybody would want to be Jewish. So therefore, in order to avoid people saying that was the base of the giur, he has to continue to pay for his mortgage.
He doesn't need to
show. Yeah, clearly he was Oymet al Har Sinai. Tanu Rabban, shtar shekatuv bo ribit. Now another issue over here is, suppose you illegally write a shtar that has ribit in it. So then the Rabbanan were konex you, and you cannot use that shtar. You cannot use it not for the keren and not for the rebit. So, ain't a go ve'lo ata keren, ve'lo ata rebit. Divrei Rabbi Meir, as a machlokas we've shown you. whether that means that the contract does not serve as proof of lending, so it's completely useless, or whether it means that the shtar reduces now the loan to being an oral loan, but it can't be used as a shtar. It can be used as proof of lending. The difference is enormous, because if it's a shtar, then it's a registered loan. If it's a registered loan, then the lien is registered, and then that means that the title insurance goes into effect, because it's a registered lien. So if Lamaisa, you had sold out a piece of property that you owned, and you sold it after you had borrowed the money against the property, the lender would be able to recover the property because of his lien. But if it's not a registered lien with the contract, then you can't do that. If the Rabbanan take away the power of this contract, even if they allow you to use the contract as proof of the loan, it's not going to help you if the guy doesn't have any money to collect from. And you're not going to be able to go to a buyer of a property and say, oh, look, I had a lien. Well, that lien isn't a kosher lien. That contract's not a kosher contract. Some learn that Rabbi Meir holds it's bichlal useless. It's just a piece of trash. And you can't even use it as proof. The Chachamim say, well, that's only vis-a-vis the rebate. You can collect the Karen with it. Now, again, the bachlokas would mean you can collect the Karen as mishubadim, or you can collect the Karen as a riot, depending on how far the Knas was. But govet ha-karen v'inu govet ha-ribit. So go miflaget. The machloket here being, the Rabbi Meir holds, when you do something that includes both permissible and non-permissible elements, illegal elements, then the entire document goes kaput. Because kansinu netera mishum isura. We will fine you, even on things that were all right, because it was done together with Issur, as Rabban and Savra, you can't, the fine is always against the Issur, not beyond the Issur that you did. Now, we do have a similar issue, and that's why the Gemara brings this up. Similar issue is like this. In this case, you have two, in the case we just had, you have two components of the shtar, licit and illicit. The licit component was the actual principle. The illicit component of the shtar was the interest, correct? But there are other shtarot that have licit and illicit elements. For instance, suppose you write a shtar chov, which is mukdam. So you predate a contract. If you predate a contract to a loan, then the contract is invalidated. Why? Because if it were a useful contract, you would be able to take the contract and illegally collect from a buyer claiming that the loan predated the sale. And therefore, your lien came earlier. And that's a lie. And because of that, the document is not valid. But there's also a licit component to the document, namely that this loan does exist, the lien does exist, the only part that's illicit is the date that you put on it. But the actual date, the incipient date that we can bring witnesses and say, well, we know that when it did take place, that is still true. And interestingly enough, we have issues that are similar to this about the contract there, because there too, how do we deal with the licit and illicit components of the contract? So now, Tanan Hat. Now, why are mugdamim psulim? Because, I mean, look, nihid lo gavu mizman rishon, is it not true that even though the date that's written in it should be unusable, but let the contract at least work for the part that's listed? So then nigvu mizman sheni, why can't we use it for the time that the loan really was chala? Omer of Shimon ben Lakish, you're 100% right. It would be dependent, actually, in the machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim that we just had in the Braita, in our sugya. If there's a licit and illicit component, so then enochinami, according to the Chachamim, the licit component is still valid, and only the illicit component is canceled. So that when it said in the Mishnah over there, the whole thing is useless, that clearly was going on Libra Rabbi Meir, who holds that in our case, the whole thing is canceled also. And you cannot collect with this document even the principle which was licit. So it's true. It's dependent in the argument that we just had, and it's clearly going on even Rabbi Meir. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, not true. Because in that case, you see, when you have a contract that has a interest component, the court's not going to honor the interest collection. But if you have a contract in which what it says is a lie, and you say, yeah, but I mean, I could tell you what part is good. That's ridiculous. Because then there's nothing to guarantee that the contract won't be illicitly used. So if you bring this in, they're simply going to stamp it void. Because nobody can ensure that, well, yes, it's good, but it's only good from this date. So we have to void it. There, everybody would agree, says Rabbi Yochanan. Because we have a gezeirah. Shema yigveh mizman harishon. If the contract is validated on any level. So he can use it to try to get a guy off of a piece of property that really shouldn't have been collected from. And therefore we cancel it. Now, there was a case of a guy, Ahu Gaber, the Mashkelein, Pardisa Lachabre, for Eser Shani. Somebody goes ahead and he takes a mortgage on somebody's orchard for 10 years. Now we know that the mortgage in those days, the meaning of the mortgage, was that you had a right to use the property. And as I mentioned earlier, there's many ways of looking at that transaction, that the mortgage was looked at essentially as a long-term rental, or it was done really with the sense of, the Rabbi Tam said, you don't have rights to go in there because the guy can protect his mortgage as a mashkin, whatever the mechanism is. This guy went in, maybe it was even, he was giving him back a certain amount on the mortgage. So he lives there for 3 years, and he takes the fruit of the orchard for 3 years. Now, the problem is that when you use something for 3 years, you could always claim that it's yours. And unless the other guy has proof that it's not yours, then you cannot be expected to keep your contract beyond 3 years. So if the guy says, well, if it's really yours, where's your contract? You say to him, well, you never complained until now, so I figured I don't have to keep a contract past 3 years because I figured it was okay. So that is indeed 3 years is the time. So in this case, the guy at the end of 3 years goes over to the owner and he says, look, I'm going to make you a deal you can't refuse. I'm a nice guy. I like this property, and I'm going to pay you for the property. But if you refuse to sell me the property, I'm simply going to go to court and say it's mine. And I'm going to take the mortgage contract, and I'm going to stuff it somewhere. So you are going to not have any way of proving that it isn't mine. So I'd advise you to take the deal. Yeah, it's playing horrible. So he eats it 3 years, goes over to the borrower, and he says, look, if you agree to sell me the property, I'll give you full value. But you start making me problems. I'm going to stuff the mashkanta, the mortgage, shtar, and I'm going to go to court claiming that I bought this property. And it's lukucha hibiyadi. So the guy says, okay, give me a day to think about it. He goes, this smart fellow, he goes and he has the property transferred to another name. He gives it over to his kids, right? Classic tax maneuvers. So Azar Komak Leilov Nokatan, he goes ahead and he has it transferred into his child's name. Comes back and tells the guy, okay, I've decided to go ahead with the sale. Sells him the property, takes the money. Okay.
They got a piece of paper.
Everything is great. It's on his name. Not the kid's name. Sells it to the guy. The guy says, okay, waives the property. I bought the property from him.
There's no money to transfer.
Oh, yeah. He paid for money. He paid him for the property. Which was worth more than the debt. Paid him for the property. Fine. So now the guy goes now and he tells everybody, well, I decided to buy the paradise. So the guy says, did you? Gee, I seem to have forgotten that I don't own that paradise. Now, obviously, he can't claim now that it was his all along. Okay, so now the mafia fellow is in trouble. So not only does he not own the property, he's lost his money.
Well, he could take money. He could get the money back, no?
All right, okay, but he has to sue for the money. Okay, so now he goes to court, tries to get the money back. All right. So now, look, the sale is definitely not a kosher sale. I mean, you can't sell something that doesn't belong to you. So the zvina vadi lo havi zvina, okay? The money, however, that was paid for the phony sale, what's the din of that money? Is that money a milva bishtar? Because, look, the money that was given to him is covered in the contract, which was a phony contract. So here we have, once again, licit and illicit components in a contract. The sale per se was illicit, but the man in the sale contract guarantees that if this property is taken from you for any reason, one of which, of course, is that I might have sold you the Brooklyn Bridge, so then you can come back to me and collect from my field. This guy, you think that the lender was playing hardball. This guy is playing double hardball. So not only did he do this little trick of transferring the contract to his son and then selling it, taking the money, he also sold the other property that he owned that the guy could have collected from to somebody else. So now this guy is trying to get his money back. The guy says, oh my gosh, money, I don't have the money. I'll pay you back $1 a year if you want. Okay. So the guy says, well, where's the other property that you own? Because you sold that after you pulled this little shtick and stole my money. So the guarantee on that sale, which was a phony sale, is collectible against that field. Oh, says the guy, gee, that piece of contract is just a worthless scrap of paper. You couldn't possibly use it to collect from the field. So now here we end up with yet a third example of where somebody's claiming, okay, but at least the guarantee part is illicit. Only the sale part was illicit. Same third example that we have of a piece of paper that is partially real and partially unreal, okay? So the first one was rebit and principle. The rebit is unreal, the principle is real. Second case we had was an actual shtar, but it was predated. So the predating now, that is not real, but the transaction is real. And here the transaction is not real, but the guarantee is real. So that's my question. Can you collect from the properties that this very, this is not a good guy to start up with, let me tell you. Can he get his money back out of the field that this guy sold out for one of these people who are on the ball? You're playing games. I'll tell you how to play games. Oh, Dilma, or do we say that, well, I mean, he guaranteed it, but it's basically an oral guarantee because the piece of paper was worthless, and an oral guarantee can't be collected against a field that he had sold out from under the other guy's nose. So now the guy's out his money and out his field. So do we say that it's kibil val pe'adami, ve'ino gavim in achasim mishubadim? Amar Abaye, well, I mean, isn't this similar to the case of Rabasi? Rabasi says that a modeh b'shtar shekatvo, eino tzarich l'kaimo, remember that we have a general principle, which is that a shtar needs to be mekuyam, needs to be certified in court. Because if it's not certified, then anybody can claim against it that it's a fraud. It was fraudulently written, it's a fake, it's a yuf, and it's not a real contract. But if the person admits to the fact that, no, that's absolutely a real contract, I'm not claiming that it's fraudulent, all I'm claiming is that I already paid this loan, and this guy's trying to collect it again. The fact that he admitted that the contract was not fraudulent means that the contract is now enforceable. Once it's enforceable, you cannot claim that you paid it. And this is not a case of a pesha asar or a pesha yitir, because the contract per se is a valid contract. All you're doing is you're saying, I relinquish my rights to demand a kiyum in order to avoid fraud, because I admit that there was no fraud. Okay, but once you do that, you're out your money, because you've got to prove that now it was paid, if the other guy still holds a contract against. So therefore, what Rabasi is saying is that the moment you admit to having written the shtar, you, phony seller, do you admit to the fact that you gave this guy a guarantee that if somebody would take that field, you would pay it out of your property? You do? Don't try to tell me about, yeah, but the whole thing was fraudulent. No. But that part you admit, and therefore we'll enforce that part against you. Isn't it the same thing? It's the same thing. Maybe in kindergarten it's the same thing. It's not in the least comparable. Mi dami? Hata nitan lehikatev. The case over there, the shtar was 100% a kosher shtar with a kosher transaction, with kosher edim, and all you're claiming is that it had been paid. And you're admitting that it's a kosher shtar. Now you're taking a worthless scrap of paper, which was about a non-existent sale of a property that you didn't own, and you're saying, yes, but I mean, I admit this part. What do you mean this part? It's not part. This is worthless. The shtar as written was fraudulent. So what do you mean? I admit that I wrote a fraudulent shtar. Therefore, we should be able to collect it. Does that make sense to you? You see that that is in some way comparable to Rabasi's din? There's nothing in common with Rabasi's din. But think Rabasi was saying, magic. I admit that I wrote it, and therefore it's enforceable. He never said that. I mean, it's completely not similar. Me, dummy. Atam there, the shtar was meant to be written that way, and over here it was fraudulent right at the beginning. So Maremar was sitting and saying over this discussion of what Rava had just pointed out, that it's not similar to Ravasi. And Ravina hears it. And Ravina says, look, this is crazy. Because we know perfectly well that we've got so many examples, and we've had these examples. We've had so many examples of cases of fraudulent sales where it is possible to enforce the clause about the guarantee. So, for instance, Rabbi Yochanan, let me show you something. Rabbi Yochanan says that the reason that, and we just had this 5 minutes ago, the reason that you can't collect from the predated shtar is because Gzeira Shema Yigveh Mizman Rishon, right? Now, by the token of Rava's logic, that's not the issue. The issue is that you wrote a fraudulent shtar, which was basically what Ramati was asking. If you wrote a fraudulent shtar, so what do you mean this part of it is good? It's exactly the same thing. You're saying you wrote a fraudulent shtar for a sale, but this part, the guarantee, that's good. It should be exactly the same thing. Now, all along when we talked about licit components and illicit components, we were pretending that there were two completely different documents. According to what Rava is saying, a document which is prima facie illicit can't be used for anything. So why did Rabbi Yochanan have to discuss the issue over there? Huh? According to you, Neima lo nitan likatev, you should have said, that was never supposed to be written, and therefore you can't use it. It's worthless scrap of paper. Oh, my lady, no, come on, please. Everybody here is going to extremes. It's not the same at all. My God. Hatam nehida lo nitan likatev bizman rishon. You're saying the shtar was not supposed to be written. Thank you very much. That's not the point that Rava was making. Rava was saying that the event never happened. Don't you understand that there's a difference between a shtar that wasn't supposed to be written as it was written and a shtar that was written on an event that never happened? There's no comparison. The fact that it was predated is a problem. But was there such a loan? Yes, fine. So it was nitan likatei bizman hasheni. I mean, it's not that it's imaginary. The shtar in this case is imaginary. That's what Rav is saying. How can you use an imaginary piece of paper to enforce a lien against the buyer? That's crazy. That's what he was saying. In this case, hakolani tandikatev klau. Okay, so then I'll bring you another case, all right? A very clear-cut example of exactly this case, and I'm sure you all remember, this was the case of a guy that sold the Brooklyn Bridge. And the guy invested, the buyer invested in these beautiful new lights along the bridge and so on and so forth. Now he wants to collect because they took the bridge away from him. So he's going back to the seller and he's saying, listen, not only do I want my money back for that bridge, I also want my investment that I put into the bridge. So the guy says, gee, you know, I really do owe you that money, but unfortunately, the field that I sold, that I guaranteed it against, was already sold. So he says, that's okay, I have a contract. Now the halakha over there is you can use that contract as a lien against the field that had been sold out, which was originally the guarantee for the bridge, for the money that you paid for the bridge, but not for the money that you invested in improvements in the bridge. According to Rava, it's a fraudulent sale, it's a worthless piece of paper, and even the part in it that states that I guarantee this sale is meaningless. I mean, it's not meaningless, it's enforceable, but it's not enforceable as a lien against the piece of property. It's enforceable as evidence that you owe the money, but it certainly can't be used to collect against the poor buyer. So here's the case. Let's look inside. A lot of time. L'shevach karka'ot ketzad. When we say that you cannot use a shtar to be collected against a buyer for improvements on a piece of property that turned out to be collected away from you after you paid for it, because it was an illicit sale. You can't use that to collect the improvement. Here's the case, continues the Braita. A guy steals a field. He steals this field and he sells it to somebody else. Okay, so it's the Brooklyn Bridge. This buyer of the field goes ahead and he puts in improvements. A year later, the real owner returns, is able to prove in court that this person sold out his field. Court is coming now, throwing him out of the property. The cops are here. He's been thrown into the street. And he's screaming, do you know how much money I put into this property? Doesn't matter. They throw him into the street. Now he wants back his sprinkler system money, right? So Kishu Govet, when he comes to collect from a field that had been owned by the Goslin who had stolen it, and now that Goslin sold that field to somebody else, he can indeed collect. But he can only collect the principal that he had paid for the property, not the money for the improvements on the property, from the Kasim Meshubadim. The improvements on the property he can only collect from whatever the Goslin has currently available. Nechasim Rabbanei Chorim. Now I ask you, says Ravina, according to Rava, this is a completely meaningless document. It's a piece of trash because it's a document about a sale that never happened. You did not own this field and you're saying, but I guarantee the sale of the field that I never owned. And therefore, the guarantee part should be valid. Whereas Rava himself, the whole point is, there's no such thing as the part is valid. How can the part be valid if the whole thing was imaginary? That's the problem. To which, now, he answered, Ravina, excuse me, says Marema. Again, you're making a mistake. You keep making these comparisons, which on the surface look like excellent comparisons. And the moment you look at it, your entire argument crumbles and it's absurd. Hachi hashta, once again, I say to you, you're doing it again. Because, look, over there we indeed had two approaches that were very different, but that were amazing in their insight into human psychology. One person says, one Mandiyama says, that the reason that in that case it is enforceable is because indeed the man wants to. We had this back all the way back at the beginning of the Masech. A guy who sells something always attempts to make certain that he's going to pay for the other person's loss. Why? Because he knows he's going to be bad-mouthed all around town. So when you're caught in something, you indeed guarantee it. So Nechale de lo nikarya gazlana, and there's another Mandiyama who surprisingly says that the reason that you stand behind it is Nechale de lekum behimnute. It's because even though you're a Goslin, that's on paper. But when you made a personal sale to somebody, that's a human transaction. The biggest Goslin in his human transaction wants to be honest. So in other words, what I want to do is, okay, so you found me out. So I want to make it up for you. So therefore, I will go now, Mephias Leilamare. I will see to it that the sale indeed will ultimately be binding, because my full intent is to pay for it. It's not that it's a piece of garbage. But in this case, it's a piece of garbage. Because remember, how did the shtar get created? By somebody who reacted to a threat of a deal that he can't refuse. Well, he's going to show him. Oh boy, can he not refuse. We're going to see who's going to end up not having to refuse. So the whole point of it was he wanted to create a fraudulent transaction. So if that's the intent, then the document actually follows its intent. What are you going to say? Yes, but the guarantee, of course, he meant to be very honest. No, he meant to screw him to the bottom line. That's what he meant to do. And he's happy that he should know it. And therefore, there was absolutely no valid component to this piece of trash at all. That's the point. So in the normal case, yes, Mephias Leilamare Mukim Leishtar. He's trying to get that shtar to be validated. Even now, ex post facto, he'll pay for it. But Hacha, over here, he was trying to teach that guy a lesson. And in Ruchi Minei Kamekam, the whole point of this shtar was to figure out a way to get this guy off his back and out of his money. So, okay, so then the shtar, Mekayim, what are you telling me? That, yeah, but he really needs to make sure that the shtar is a good shtar. No, he doesn't. Dear President, please come back to the present. What? Ask. What is the problem? The end part is simple. What we're saying is like this. People make fraudulent contracts in two ways. One way that they'll make a fraudulent contract is with the intent to validate it ex post facto. I don't own this field now. I need the money. I'm going to sell it to you now. But I don't really intend to do you any harm. I'm going to do my best to buy the field for you when the guy comes back. He told me once he was going to sell me the field. He's away. This is a deal I always wanted to do. I have an opportunity. You want to buy it? I couldn't resist. So over there we say that he wants to help the guy out. But in this case, so there we don't say the document is fraudulent and therefore all of it is meaningless because none of it was meant. But over here, it was absolutely not meant. That's what he was trying to do. He was trying to show him in big red letters what he thinks of him. Okay, so obviously the guarantee is not an enforceable guarantee. It's ridiculous. A guarantee about a non-existent sale. Shoot. He's back.
If you write a star dated on a Sunday, invalid.
Wow.
Star was dated on a Sunday. If you bought a house dated on a Sunday or a loan or anything, you couldn't take it to court. They wouldn't accept a star.
In the U.S., it used to be like that in checks. You remember this? You wrote a check that was dated on Sunday. Very long time ago. You couldn't write a check that was dated Sunday.
That was part of the blue law? Then?
Yeah, before, while there were blue laws. It was unbelievable. Yeah, listen, I mean, what they did in South Africa, they didn't allow stores to open on Sunday. That's what it was in the United States.
Couldn't work in your garden.
Yeah, that's a chumrah already. Now, this is a Mishnah that we have discussed numerous times before. You cannot go ahead by basically on an assumption that you'll take delivery later. What you really want to do is you want to buy long. So you're assuming this guy wants to sell to you short. You believe that you're going to be getting much more than you paid for. So you're saying, okay, I'm ready to buy 100 tons of apples. Deliver me the apples a half a year from now. 100 tons, delicious apples. Today's price. What is today's price? Gives you a price. You can't do that. Unless there is an official market price that guy could now buy to hedge his commitment to you. In other words, if the seller of those perot could buy an option on apples at that price, fine. So then it's his business. Either he actualizes that option or not. But he's covered. But if he himself isn't sure that he's going to be able to get those apples today, then basically what's happening is that he is in need of your money, and he's taking your money on the gamble that he'll earn enough with it to make it worthwhile to provide you perot at that time that he can't even get now. That's called ribit. That's exactly what it is. So he's ready to pay you more in perot than would... Okay, and he won't be able to get it today. Therefore, you have to wait until Yetzeh Ashar. But once there is an official price posted, Yetzeh Ashar, then Puski, then you can make that deal because Afa Pisha Ein Lazeh Yesh Lazeh. Who cares if he has the payroll or doesn't have the payroll? The point is, he's selling you something he doesn't have, let him walk down the street and get it. It's not my problem. So I don't have to view that as rebate. Now, suppose he is the first man in, okay? There is no shot. In other words, the season is just beginning. He's the first person, the tchila lekotzrim, but he actually has the chita. So he's got the wheat. Nobody else has the wheat. There's no price on wheat because nobody else is selling. So now he says, look, I have wheat. I'm ready to deliver this wheat to you in 3 months. This is what I want. So he gives him a price. Now, the truth is, this wheat is not currently deliverable. because it needs drying, it needs processing, but it's already in from the field. So then he can be posikimo, even though it's in the gadish, and he still has a lot of work to do. Not only that, if he has grapes now that are in a holding container, which is what you do before letting them get soft, before you actually turn it into wine, you can sell him the wine that doesn't exist because the grapes exist. Same thing is true about oil. You've put the olives, he's a processor. He put the olives already into the holding containers, into the maten, and now they need to heat a little bit until they're softened before he's going to put them into the press. Or you have bitzim shoyotzer. So you've got these little clay balls that are going to be put into his machine to turn them into pots or corningware or whatever, right? And he hasn't made the plates yet, but he's selling them as plates. But that's okay, because he's the manufacturer. He already has the material that he says he's going to be delivering on. So then he doesn't need to have a postage shahr, because he doesn't need to buy it from anybody. He just needs the complete processing of something that he already owns, that's in his rishos. And when he sells it to you, he is selling it to you backed by the actual commodity. That's considered to be fine. No. Posekimo ala zevel kol yamot hashana. You want to give him garbage, you always get garbage. So, I mean, but even though it's compost, there's always that, it's always available. Rabbi Yossi omer, not true. Ein poskin ala zevel im ken haitalo zevel ba'ashpa, which we'll see is logic. He needs to already have a compost pile. V'chachamim atirin v'chachamim say, no, you don't, which seems to be completely repetitive of what the original Tanakama said. The Gemara is going to ask, what's the difference between what you said before and now? Uposekimo b'shar hagavoa. Not only that, you can make a deal based on the higher shar. The higher shar is the lower price. Remember that the way that we always discuss prices is in terms of how much grain you get per dinner, per sella, right? So as we talk about four or three, it's the difference between the American way of discussing mileage, the automobile mileage, and the European way of discussing the automobile mileage. The Americans talk about you get so many miles per gallon, so you know what you're talking about, right? Whereas the Europeans talk about you have so many liters per mile, per kilometer. So it's the same thing. It's just that they reversed what the unit is that they're using, you see. It's the same thing as over here. We always talk about a shahr of four for a dollar as opposed to three for a dollar, not a dollar for four or a dollar for three. So the higher shahr is the lower price. The higher shahr, you get more per sella. That's the point. So you have a right to be posek on a shahr gavoa because the shahr is already out, even though you're going to be taking delivery now. And you say to him, I always want the lower price. In other words, you say to him, I'm going to take delivery, but if by then the price fell, then I want the lower price. And we don't say to him, oh, so now wait a minute. So now you're getting, because you're paying money, you're going to be getting the cheaper price, whether it's now or later. That's okay. So says the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yudomer, it's more than that. It's Alpha Pishalo Pasakimo Bishagavoa. Yocholomarlo, either Tainli Kazeh or Tainli at Mootai. Even though you did not make that deal up front. The bottom line is, when the guy comes to deliver to you, you could say, I don't want to take delivery at that price, give me my money back. Which boils down to the same thing, because you can always force the guy to accept the shahr hagavoa, because you always have a right to get your money back. Now again, we're going to be talking about all of this in the Gemara. Amr Vasi, Amr Yochanan, Ein Poskin al Shahr Shebishuk. You cannot use a spot price to define a commodity value, because a spot price is never going to hold when you need to actually buy the commodity. Since the whole point of the Mishnah is that if Ava Pisha Ein Lezeh, Yesh Lezeh, if you have a local spot price, the moment that you go to buy, the price is going to go up. And therefore, it is not true that Ava Pisha Ein Lezeh. Basically, what the spot price boils down to is it's being offered. So if it's being offered, the moment there's a taker, for a little bit, it's going to go up now for the next buyer, so then you can't get all the amount of it you want, and you can't really back up your contract. Did Rabbi Yochanan mean to say that you're not even able to use a dormouse? What exactly is a dormouse? A dormouse is a large central butchery. We're over there where they post a price for meat. They have a large inventory, and it's going to hold. So it's not just a spot price. So when he said shahr shebishuk, was he even including a dormus? Omar Lane, no, of course not. He's talking about the smaller cities, not the Krachim. He's talking about smaller cities that don't have a lot of stuff available. So their spot price is really always moving because it's always a function of what's available. And that you can't rely on. So what did you think? I didn't say what you thought. You thought that Rabbi Yochanan was saying you can't use a dormouse. What can you use? I mean, Laman Gisolik Adaitami Kora. If you thought that Om Rabbi Yochanan Afiluk, a dormouse has it, so then what would the Mishnah have meant when it said, but Yotze Ashar Poskim? I mean, if even a dormouse isn't good enough, what is good enough? Where would the case of a price be suitable for Pisuk in the Mishnah? Well, it could be talking about chiti de'achlavi or arvin, the mushroom tiritvei. That could be talking about a shahr that comes out after they open up the warehouses. Once the warehouses have been opened, now we've got a supply for the next 3 months. And therefore, there's not going to be sharp fluctuations. Or once the boats come into port, if it's an area that doesn't grow its own drain, and now we've got a delivery that's going to be here for months. That's mashif tirei tve. That's got a very long time to go. Tan rabbanan ein poskin al perot ad sheyetze ashar yotze ashar poskin because af al pish en lezeh yesh lezeh. Hayu chadashot mi arban. I suppose you've got the new grain is coming in, but it's not dried yet, and that's posted at $4 per dollar. And the older grain, which is dried, is posted at $3. That's like because it's already dried out. So ein poskin ad sheyetze ashar lechadash uli yashan. Then you cannot be posek based on the fact that you could get the new grain because at the time that you're going to deliver it, it's not going to be new grain. You would not be able to give it to him for $4 when the price is really for $3, even though right now you could buy new grain, because you're not going to be giving him what it is that you're able to buy now. Same thing is true. So it would need now to even out as it gets further down into the season, where the new grain is also now evaluated at the price of the old grain. So you need to have a shahr both for Chadash and Yosha. Suppose you have lekutot. Lekutot are being sold $4 to the dollar. Now, lekutot mean the things that aniyim pick up, the lower quality grain that they're getting out is lekya, chikha, peya. That's not the best quality. So over there, they're not businessmen. They sell their stuff and they'll give you 4 saw per dollar, okay? Normal people that are farmers are selling at 3 saw per dollar. You cannot be posek the loan unless you've got the actual value being equal. Now, how about if what you want to do is buy from a locate? So then it shouldn't matter, right? Because what you want to do is you go over to a poor man. You know that he's going to be giving you Lakut grain based on the value of Lakut grain now. Says Rav Nachman, well, that's fine. If you're going to be going over to a locate, then you'll pay him Kishar Lakutot. Amalei Rav or Rav Nachman, that doesn't make any sense. If you could do that, then why can't you make a deal with anybody based on the Shahr Lakutot? Because that person could go and make a deal with a locate. I mean, I thought that's the whole point, is that we're saying that those are, by definition, spot deals. So then how can you make it with the guy himself? It really shouldn't matter. So Mishna locate. You're saying, okay, you know what? It must be that we're relying on the fact that there's a lot of aniyim around, right? So if one ani doesn't have, he knows friends that he could get it from, and he'll be able to get it from the friends at that price. So it's the equivalent of a yotza hashar. That's what you're saying. But if you believe that, then Mishna locate, where if he doesn't have the grain, he can always go and borrow it from another locate, right? So he'll go to a lekutot, chavrei. So can't the balabayit do the same thing? The balabayit could go, and he could always get it from an ani at that value. He could borrow it, for that matter, in order to sell. Omar Le said, Rav Nachman, well, the reality is that a balabayit will not go to a lakut to get it. It's outrageous. It's just not done. It's an embarrassment. Whoever heard of a farmer running to the ani and saying, could you lend me the grain to sell? He's not going to do it. So in practical terms, he is going to be paying the higher price. So therefore, he cannot guarantee you delivery at a lower price. That's all I'm saying. If you're actually borrowing it from a poor person, so fine, he's got the same access to other poor people that a farmer has access to and other farmers. But that's a different value. So zila b'mil to l'mez of milokah. Oh, you know what? Let me tell you something. Somebody that is giving money to a balabayit is, by definition, assuming that he's getting higher quality grain. So for you to say, well, the balabayit could always go and get grain at the lower price from a lakut. Yeah, right. But look at the quality of grain. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be the pieces that fell off to the ground that weren't properly. It's always going to be lower quality stuff. So, somebody who's giving money to a balabayit, he is giving it for higher quality stuff, not the stuff that you're going to get from a lakut. Ravina Amar, Nihidish Lichut Dochri Letle, Zichiyam and Rabbanan Itle. Nonetheless, itle zechiyah min rabbanan. Okay, now Yisrael ati leklal shlichut, and therefore they were metakein zechiyah. But akum is never ati leklal shlichut. Tana rabban. Yisrael shelava ma'ot min anochri beribit v'zakvan alav b'milva. And then he goes ahead and he's mitgayer. So im kodim shnit gayer zakvan alav b'milva. So then he's govet, a keren v'ena govet, v'govet a ribit also. But if he was already a Jew and now we're trying to collect a ribit, we give him the bottom line, what he owes with principal and interest. So then zakvan alav b'milva, then he can only be govet the keren. He cannot be govet the ribit. And vice versa, if the Nachri was the borrow, so it was lava ma'ot mi Yisrael beribit. And zakvan alav b'milva v'nitgayer. See, ma'achol lo nitgayer zakvan alav b'milva govet ha-keren v'govet ha-ribit. Im mish nitgayer zakvan alav b'milva govet ha-keren v'eno govet ha-ribit. Rabbi Yossi omer, Nachri shelava ma'ot mi Yisrael beribit, ben kach govet ha-keren v'govet ha-ribit, even if he became Jewish before, and I'll tell you, Amarav, Amarav, Chista, Amarav, Huna, Halok, Rabbi Yossi, and furthermore, I'll tell you the reasoning, says Rav, my time, Rabbi Yossi, Kedei Shelo Yomru, Bishvam Motav, Nidgayerza, to save himself the interest on his loan. Tana Rabbana, Shtar, Shekatuv Bo Ribit, Konsino Tov Enogove Lo Atakeren Lo Ataribit, Tibur Rabbi Meir, Vechachamim Omri, Gove Atakeren, Veino Gove Ataribit. So now, Bemaikav, it's again. Rabbi Meir Zavar Katsina Natera Mishum Yisura. Rabbi Natsavar Lo Katsina Natera Mishum Yisura. Tanata. Shtarecho v'mugdamim psulim v'mugharim ksherim. So now, mugdamim amai psulim, nihidelo gavu mizman rishon, at least let it be usable for zman sheni. Omrit, Rabbi Lakish, b'machloket shnuya v'Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, afilo temer Rabbanan, gizera shema yigve mazman harishon. And then he tells the guy, here's the deal, you can't refuse. Good, I'll pay you. But ilo, kavishna lishtor mashkanta, and I'll claim that I bought it from you. How are you going to be able to get me out? Also, kam akne livno akatan. Vahada zobna niale. So, this vini vade lo habiz vini. The shaila is the money that the guy paid for the non-existent sale. Is it kemilva b'shtar damim, and he's government achas b'shubadim, or dilma kemilva alped damim, but ain't a government achas b'shubadim? Om Rabbi, love, I didn't have yet, Rabasi. I mean, Rabasi said that if you're motive b'shtar shekatvo, ain't a tzarek lekaimo, even though technically the rest of the shtar is not usable, is government achas b'shubadim? Om Rabbi, what are you talking about? Midami atam nitan likatev. Hacha, the whole thing is ridiculous. Lo nitan nikatev at all. Yossi Marema v'gomel ha-shmaitza. So Ravina es Marema. So according to this, Hodi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that Gezer Hashem ha-yigve mizman rishon, all he needed to say was, the shtar is an illicit shtar, because it was predated. So nema lo nitan nikatev. Amar lei, no. Harchi ha-shtar, atam. The shtar is lo nitan likatev, true, mizman rishon, but at least the transaction took place. Nitan likatev mizman sheni, but acha, lo nitan likatev klal, it's a lie. El ha-detanyi l'sheva kakot ketzad, ha-reshe gozal sodam mechavero. Now that's a pretty big lie, isn't it? And he's mocha la-acha, mishbicha. And v'are yotza mitachad yado. Kishu goveh, goveh ta-kerim minachos mishubodim. And the sheva, he's goveh minachos minachorim. Why don't we say it's lo nitan likatev because it was a phony transaction? No. Okay. Hatam, there's two approaches. I mean, if you hold, like the Man Yoma, who says, dechale de lo nikari gazlan, or you hold like the Man Yoma, who says a guy wants to be seen as honest. Lekim le, dechale de lekim emnute. But the bottom line is, b'fais le lemore, umukim le nishtar, he wants this shtar to be actually enforceable. But acha, his whole intent was to screw the other guy out of the money, to teach him a lesson. Over there, what, you're going to tell me shtar mekayimah, what he's trying to get the shtar to be a good shtar? On the contrary. Ain't poskin ala perot achi yitzi ashar. Yatsa ashar poskin, because afa b'shein lezeh yesh lezeh. Now suppose this guy is so early that there is no shtar, but he has the chitin. So ayut chilala kotzrim, you can be poskin or even on the gadish. Or if he has anavim, he's got an avichel anavim, or a matayin avzeitim, or bitzim avayotzer, or seed mishishak obekivshan. It hasn't even been processed yet, the line, but it's already in the furnace. Pasekimo alazeva koyimot hashana. Rabbi Yossi omer ein poskin alazeva. Elin ken haitala zeva bashpa. Chachamim matirin. Uposkimo b'shar hagavoa. Rabbi Yossi omer afu shelo pasekimo b'shar hagavoa. Boy, it's not the same thing. Because he can always say, okay, either give me back my money or give me the parrot at the price that I want, the current price. So tell me kazeh or tell me at motai. Omer Ravasi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, ain't poskin al shar shabashuk at all. Omer Ravasi, Ravasi, did Rabbi Yochanan mean to say that a shar shuk includes even a dormouse? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, bashuk shalai, arot, alokvi, tirai. So what did you think? I mean, like, Laman di Omer, the Saka died to me, kar di Omer Rabbi Yochanan, afilu ke dormouse hazeh. So when, what did the Mishnah mean when it said, ain't poskin al perot, achi etzah shar? But if yatzah shar poskim, which shar? Ech meshkazaslah. Not Matznitz, we'd be talking about Bechiti Dachlavi, the Arve. Over there, Moshe Tiratvei. Ton Rabban, Ein Poskin Al Pirot Achi Yetzi Ashar, Yotza Ashar Poskin, Hafim Shein Hazeh, Yesh Lezeh. Ayu Chadashot Mi Arba, Mi Shanot Mi Shalosh, Ein Poskin Achi Yetzi Ashar, Lechadash Uli Ashar. Ayu Lekutot Mi Arba, Lekol Adam Mi Shalosh, Ein Poskin Achi Yetzi Ashar, Lekut Lamocher. Omrev Nachman poskim la lekutot kishar lekutot. I'm like Rav Lev Nachman. What's an afkamina? Mashal locate. Say yidlei iletlei. Rather, you can go to another locate and borrow it. It's a fine. So Balabai could do the same thing. Balabai dami Yosef milok Yosef milokut. Amalei Balabai it's yaleba milti. He's never going to do that. Lemezef milokut. Or you know what? Truth is, it's noticeably different grain. Is giving his money up here, Shapira. And that's why he was Yoiv. He can't supply him with any lower quality.